Sir Kevin had not yet seen fit to inform Mace Tyrell of her coming. The hand, he knew, would not be pleased. The man we need is Littlefinger. Peter Baelish had a gift for conjuring dragons from the air. Hire the mountains, men, Sir Kevin suggested. Red Runnet will have no further use for them. He did not think that Mace Tyrell would be so clumsy as to try and murder either Pycelle or Swift. But if guards made them feel safer, let them have guards. The three men walked together from the throne room. Outside, the snow was swirling round the outer ward, a caged beast howling to be free.
"Have you ever felt such cold?" asked Sir Harris.
"The time to speak of the cold," said Grand Maester Pycelle, "is not when we are standing out in it."
He made his slow way across the outer ward back to his chambers. The others lingered for a moment on the throne room steps. "I put no faith in these Meerish bankers," Sir Kevin told his good father. "You had best prepare to go to Braavos." Sir Harris did not look happy at the prospect.
"If I must, but I say again, this trouble is not of my doing."
No, it was Cersei who decided that the Iron Bank would wait for their due. Should I send her to Braavos? Sir Harris blinked.
Grace, that...
Sir Kevin rescued him. "That was a jape, a bad one. Go and find a warm fire. I mean to do the same." He yanked his gloves on and set off across the yard, leaning hard into the wind as his cloak snapped and swirled behind him. The dry moat surrounding Maegar's holdfast was 3 feet deep in snow, the iron spikes that lined it glistening with frost. The only way in or out of Maegar's was across the drawbridge that spanned that moat. A knight of the King's Guard was always posted at its far end. Tonight the duty had fallen to Sir Merrin Trent, with Balon Swan hunting the rogue knight Darkstar down in Dawn, Loras Tyrell gravely wounded on Dragonstone, and Jaime vanished in the Riverlands. Only 4 of the White Swords remained in King's Landing, and Sir Kevin had thrown Osmond Kettleblack and his brother Osfried into the dungeon within hours of Cersei's confessing that she had taken both men as lovers. That left only Trent, the feeble Boris Blunt, and Kyburn's mute monster Robert Strong to protect the young king and royal family.
"I will need to find some new swords for the King's Guard. Tommen should have 7 good knights about him. In the past, the King's Guard had served for life, but that had not stopped Joffrey from dismissing Sir Barristan Selmy to make a place for his dog, Sandor Clegane. Kevin could make use of that precedent. I could put Lancel in a white cloak," he reflected. "There is more honour in that than he will ever find in the warrior's sons." Kevin Lannister hung his snow-sodden cloak inside his solar, pulled off his boots, and commanded his serving man to fetch some fresh wood for his fire. "A cup of mild wine would go down well," he said as he settled by the hearth. "See to it." The fire soon thawed him, and the wine warmed his insides nicely. It also made him sleepy, so he dare not drink another cup. His day was far from done. He had reports to read, letters to write, and supper with Cersei and the king. His niece had been subdued and submissive since her walk of atonement, thank the gods. The novices who attended her reported that she spent 1/3 of her waking hours with her son, 1/3 in prayer, and the rest in her tub. She was bathing herself 4 or 5 times a day, scrubbing herself with horsehair brushes and strong lye soap, as if she meant to scrape her skin off. "She will never wash this stain away, no matter how hard she scrubs." Sir Kevin remembered the girl she once had been, so full of life and mischief, and when she flowered, had there ever been a maid so sweet to look upon? If Ares had agreed to marry her to Rhaegar, how many deaths might have been avoided? Cersei could have given the prince the sons he wanted, lions with purple eyes and silver manes, and with such a wife Rhaegar might never have looked twice at Lyanna Stark. The northern girl had a wild beauty, as he recalled, but however bright a torch might burn, it could never match the rising sun. But it did no good to brood on lost battles and roads not taken. That was a vice of old Donmen. Rhaegar had wed Ilya of Dorne. Lyanna Stark had died. Robert Baratheon had taken Cersei to bride. And here they were. And tonight his own road would take him to his niece's chambers and face to face with Cersei. "I have no reason to feel guilty," Sir Kevin told himself. "Tywin would understand that, surely. It was his daughter who brought shame down on her name, not I. What I did for the good of House Lannister." It was not as if his brother had never done the same. In their father's final years, after their mother's passing, their sire had taken the comely daughter of a candlemaker as mistress. It was not unknown for a widowed lord to keep a common girl as bedwarmer. But Lord Titus soon began seating the woman beside him in the hall, showering her with gifts and honours, even asking her views on matters of state. Within a year she was dismissing servants, ordering about his household knights, even speaking for his lordship when he was indisposed. She grew so influential that it was said about Lannisport that any man who wished for his petition to be heard should kneel before her and speak loudly to her lap, for Titus Lannister's ear was between his lady's legs. She had even taken to wearing their mother's jewels. Until the day their lord father's heart had burst in his chest, as he was ascending a steep flight of steps to her bed, that is, all the self-seekers who had named themselves her friends and cultivated her favour had abandoned her quickly enough when Tywin had her stripped naked and paraded through Lannisport to the docks like a common whore. Though no man laid a hand on her, that walk spelled the end of her power. Surely Tywin would never have dreamed that same fate awaited his own golden daughter. "It had to be," Sir Kevin muttered over the last of his wine. His High Holiness had to be appeased. Tommen needed the faith behind him in the battles to come. And Cersei, the golden child, had grown into a vain, foolish, greedy woman. Left to rule, she would ruin Tommen, as she had Joffrey. Outside, the wind was rising, clawing at the shutters of his chamber. Sir Kevin pushed himself to his feet. Time to face the lioness in her den. "We have pulled her claws. Jamie, though?" But no, he would not brood on that. He donned an old, well-worn doublet, in case his niece had a mind to throw another cup of wine in his face. But he left his sword belt hanging on the back of his chair. Only the knights of the King's Guard were permitted swords in Tommen's presence. Sir Boris Blunt was in attendance on the boy king and his mother when Sir Kevin entered the royal chambers. Blunt wore enamel scale, white cloak, and half-helm. He did not look well. Of late, Boris had grown notably heavier about the face and belly, and his colour was not good, and he was leaning against the wall behind him, as if standing had become too great an effort for him. The meal was served by three novices, well-scrubbed girls of good birth between the ages of 12 and 16. In their soft white woollens, each seemed more innocent and unworldly than the last. Yet the High Septon had insisted that no girl spend more than 7 days in the Queen's service, lest Cersei corrupt her. They tended the Queen's wardrobe, drew her bath, poured her wine, changed her bedclothes of a morning. One shared the Queen's bed every night, to ascertain she had no other company. The other two slept in an adjoining chamber with the Scepter, who looked over them. A tall stalk of a girl, with a pockmarked face, escorted him into the royal presence. Cersei rose when he entered and kissed him lightly on the cheek. "Dear uncle, it's so good of you to sup with us." The queen was dressed as modestly as any matron, in a dark brown gown that buttoned up to her throat
and a hooded green mantle that covered her shaved head. Before a walk, she would have flaunted her boldness beneath a golden crown. "Come sit," she said. "Will you have wine?" "A cup." He sat, still wary. A freckled novice filled their cups with hot spiced wine.
"Tommen tells me that Lord Tyrell intends to rebuild the Tower of the Hand,"
Cersei said.
Sir Kevin nodded. "The new tower will be twice as tall as the one you burned," he says.
Cersei gave a throaty laugh. "Long lances, tall towers. Is Lord Tyrell hinting at something?" That made him smile. It is good that she still remembers how to laugh. When he asked if she had all that she required, the queen said, "I am well served. The girls are sweet, and the good scepters make certain that I say my prayers. But once my innocence is proved, it would please me if Taina Merryweather might attend me once again. She could bring her son to court. Tommen needs other boys about him, friends of noble birth." It was a modest request. Sir Kevin saw no reason why it should not be granted. He could foster the Merryweather boy himself, whilst Lady Taina accompanied Cersei back to Casterly Rock. "I will send for her after the trial," he promised. Supper began with beef and barley soup, followed by a brace of quail and a roast pike, near 3 feet long, with turnips, mushrooms, and plenty of hot bread and butter. Sir Boris tasted every dish that was set before the king. A humiliating duty for a knight of the king's guard, but perhaps all Blunt was capable of these days, and wise after the way Tommen's brother had died. The king seemed happier than Kevin Lannister had seen him in a long time. From soup to sweet, Tommen burbled about the exploits of his kittens whilst feeding them morsels of pike off his own royal plate.
"The bad cat was outside my window last night," he informed Kevin at one point, "but Sir Ponce hissed at him, and he ran off across the roofs."
"The bad cat," Sir Kevin said, amused. "Here's a sweet boy."
"An old black tomcat with a torn ear," Cersei told him. "A filthy thing, and foul-tempered. He clawed Joff's hand once." She made a face. "The cats keep the rats down, I know, but that one, he's been known to attack ravens in the rookery. I will ask the ratters to set a trap for him." Sir Kevin could not remember ever seeing his niece so quiet, so subdued, so demure. All for the good, he supposed. But it made him sad as well. Her fire is quenched. She who used to burn so bright. "You have not asked about your brother," he said, as they were waiting for the cream cakes. Cream cakes were the king's favorite. Cersei lifted her chin, her green eyes shining in the candlelight. "Jaime, have you had word?"
"None."
"Cersei, you may need to prepare yourself for—" "If he were dead, I would know it. We came into this world together, uncle. He would not go without me."
She took a drink of wine.
"Tyrion can leave whenever he wishes. You have had no word of him either, I suppose."
"No one has tried to sell us a dwarf's head of late, no." She nodded.
"Uncle, may I ask you a question?"
"Whatever you wish."
"Your wife, do you mean to bring her to court?"
"No. Dorna was a gentle soul, never comfortable but at home with friends and kin around her. She had done well by their children, dreamed of having grandchildren, prayed 7 times a day, loved needlework and flowers. In King's Landing, she would be as happy as one of Tommen's kittens in a pit of vipers.
My lady wife mislikes travel. Lannisport is her place. It is a wise woman who knows her place."
He did not like the sound of that.
"Say what you mean."
"I thought I did."
Cersei held out her cup. The freckled girl filled it once again. The cream cakes appeared then, and the conversation took a lighter turn. Only after Tommen and his kittens were escorted off to the royal bedchamber by Sir Boris did their talk turn to the queen's trial.
"Osney's brothers will not stand by idly and watch him die,"
Cersei warned him. "I did not expect that they would. I've had the both of them arrested." That seemed to take her aback.
"For what crime?"
"Fornication with a queen. His High Holiness says that you confessed to bedding both of them. Had you forgotten?" Her face reddened.
"No. What will you do with them?"
"The wall. If they admit their guilt, if they deny it, they can face Sir Robert. Such men should never have been raised so high." Cersei lowered her head.
I misjudged them."
"You misjudged a good many men, it seems." He might have said more, but the dark-haired novice, with the round cheeks, returned to say,
"My lord, my lady, I'm sorry to intrude, but there is a boy below. Grand Maester Pycelle begs the favour of the Lord Regent's presence at once."
"Dark wings, dark words," Sir Kevin thought. "Could Storm's End have fallen? Or might this be word from Bolton in the north?"
"It might be news of Jamie,"
the Queen said. There was only one way to know. Sir Kevin rose. "Pray excuse me." Before he took his leave, he dropped to one knee and kissed his niece upon the hand. If a silent giant failed her, it might be the last kiss she would ever know. The messenger was a boy of 8 or 9, so bundled up in fur he seemed a bear cub. Trant had kept him waiting out on the drawbridge, rather than admit him into Magor's. "Go find a fire, lad," Sir Kevin told him, pressing a penny into his hand. "I know the way to the rookery well enough." The snow had finally stopped falling. Behind a veil of ragged clouds, a full moon floated fat and white as a snowball. The stars shone cold and distant. As Sir Kevin made his way across the inner ward, the castle seemed an alien place, where every keep and tower had grown icy teeth, and all familiar paths had vanished beneath a white blanket. Once an icicle long as a spear fell to shatter by his feet. "Autumn in King's Landing," he brooded. "What must it be like up on the wall?" The door was opened by a serving girl, a skinny thing in a fur-lined robe much too big for her. Sir Kevin stamped the snow off his boots, removed his cloak, tossed it to her. "The Grand Maester is expecting me," he announced. The girl nodded, solemn and silent, and pointed to the steps. Pycelle's chambers were beneath the rookery, a spacious suite of rooms cluttered with racks of herbs and salves and potions and shelves jammed full of books and scrolls. Sir Kevin had always found them uncomfortably hot. Not tonight. Once past the chamber door, the chill was palpable. Black ash and dying embers were all that remained of the hearth fire. A few flickering candles cast pools of dim light here and there. The rest was shrouded in shadow, except beneath the open window, where a spray of ice crystals glittered in the moonlight, swirling in the wind. On the window seat a raven loitered, pale, huge, its feathers ruffled. It was the largest raven that Kevin Lannister had ever seen, larger than any hunting hawk at Castle Rock, larger than the largest owl. Blowing snow danced around it, and the moon painted it silver.
"Not silver, white. The bird is white."
The white ravens of the citadel did not carry messages as their dark cousins did. When they went forth from Old Town, it was for one purpose only, to herald a change of seasons.
"Winter," said Sir Kevin.
The word made a white mist in the air. He turned away from the window. Then something slammed him in the chest, between the ribs, hard as a giant's fist. It drove the breath from him and sent him lurching backwards. The white raven took to the air, its pale wings slapping him about the head. Sir Kevin half sat and half fell onto the window seat.
"What? Who?"
A quarrel was sunk almost to the fletching in his chest.
"No! No, that was how my brother died."
Blood was seeping out around the shaft.
"Pycelle,"
he muttered, confused.
"Help me, I..."
Then he saw. Grand Maester Picel was seated at his table, his head pillowed on the great leather-bound tome before him.
Sleeping,
Kevin thought, until he blinked and saw the deep red gash in the old man's spotted skull, and the blood pooled beneath his head, staining the pages of his book. All around his candle were bits of bone and brain, islands in a lake of melted wax. He wanted guards, Sir Kevin thought. I should have sent him guards. Could Cersei have been right all along? Was this his nephew's work?
Tyrion,
he called.
Where?
Far away, a half-familiar voice replied.
He stood in a pool of shadow by a bookcase, plump, pale-faced, round-shouldered, clutching a crossbow in soft, powdered hands. Silk slippers swaddled his feet.
Varys?
The eunuch set the crossbow down.
Sir Kevin, forgive me if you can. I bear you no ill will. This was not done from malice. It was for the realm, for the children.
I have children. I have a wife. Oh, Dorna!
Pain washed over him. He closed his eyes, opened them again.
There are hundreds of Lannister guardsmen in this castle.
Well, none in this room, thankfully. This pains me, my lord. You do not deserve to die alone on such a cold, dark night. There are many like you, good men in service to bad causes. But you were threatening to undo all the queen's good work, to reconcile High Garden and Costly Rock. Bind the faith to your little king. Unite the Seven Kingdoms under Tommen's rule. So?
A gust of wind blew up. Sir Kevin shivered violently.
Are you cold, my lord? Asked Varys. Do forgive me. The Grand Maester befouled himself in dying, and the stink was so abominable that I thought I might choke.
Sir Kevin tried to rise, but the strength had left him. He could not feel his legs.
I thought the crossbow fitting. You shared so much with Lord Tywin. Why not that, Your niece will think the Tyrells had you murdered. Mayhaps with the connivance of the imp. The Tyrells will suspect her. Someone somewhere will find a way to blame the Dornish men. Doubt, division, and mistrust will eat the very ground beneath your boy king. Whilst Aegon raises his banner above Storm's End, and the lords of the realm gather round him.
Aegon? For a moment he did not understand. Then he remembered. A babe swaddled in a crimson cloak, the cloth stained with his blood and brains.
Dead? He's dead?
No.
The eunuch's voice seemed deeper.
He is here. Aegon has been shaped for rule since before he could walk. He has been trained in arms as befits a knight to be. But that was not the end of his education. He reads and writes. He speaks several tongues. He has studied history and law and poetry. A scepter has instructed him in the mysteries of the faith, since he was old enough to understand them. He has lived with fisherfolk, worked with his hands, swum in rivers, and mended nets and learned to wash his own clothes at need. He can fish and cook and bind up a wound. He knows what it is like to be hungry, to be hunted, to be afraid. Tommen has been taught that kingship is his right. Aegon knows that kingship is his duty, that a king must put his people first and live and rule for them.
Kevin Lannister tried to cry out,
to his guards, his wife, his brother. But the words would not come. Blood dribbled from his mouth. He shuddered violently.
"I am sorry." Vares wrung his hands. "You are suffering, I know. Yet here I stand, going on like some silly old woman. Time to make an end to it."
The eunuch pursed his lips and gave a little whistle. Sir Kevin was cold as ice, and every laboured breath sent a fresh stab of pain through him. He glimpsed movement, heard the soft, scuffling sound of slippered feet on stone. A child emerged from a pool of darkness, a pale boy in a ragged robe. No more than 9 or 10. Another rose up behind the Grand Maester's chair. The girl who had opened the door for him was there as well. They were all around him, half a dozen of them, white-faced children, with dark eyes, boys and girls together. And in their hands, the daggers.
Jamie. The king sat at the head of the table, a stack of cushions under his arse, signing each document as it was presented to him. "Only a few more, Your Grace," Sir Kevin Lannister assured him. "This is a bill of attainder against Lord Edmure Tully, stripping him of River Run and all its lands and incomes, for rebelling against his lawful king. This is a similar attainder against his uncle, Sir Brynden Tully the Blackfish." Tommen signed them one after the other, dipping the quill carefully and writing his name in a broad, childish hand. Jamie watched from the foot of the table, thinking of all those lords who aspired to a seat on the king's small council. "They can bloody well have mine." If this was power, why did it taste like tedium? He did not feel especially powerful, watching Tommen dip his quill into the inkpot again. He felt bored. And sore. Every muscle in his body ached, and his ribs and shoulders were bruised from the battering they'd gotten, courtesy of Sir Adam Marbrand. Just thinking of it made him wince. He could only hope the man would keep his mouth shut. Jamie had known Marbrand since he was a boy serving as a page at Castle Rock. He trusted him as much as he trusted anyone, enough to ask him to take up shields and tawny swords. He had wanted to know if he could fight with his left hand. "And now I do." The knowledge was more painful than the beating that Sir Adam had given him, and the beating was so bad he could hardly dress himself this morning. If they had been fighting in earnest, Jamie would have died 2 dozen deaths. It seemed so simple, changing hands. It wasn't. Every instinct he had was wrong. He had to think about everything, where once he'd just moved. And while he was thinking, Marbrand was thumping him. His left hand couldn't even seem to hold a longsword properly. Sir Adam had disarmed him thrice, sending his blade spinning. "This grants said lands, incomes, and castle to Sir Eamon Frey and his lady wife, Lady Jenna." Sir Kevin presented another sheath of parchments to the king. Tommen dipped and signed. "This is a decree of legitimacy for a natural son of Lord Roose Bolton of the Dreadfort, and this names Lord Bolton your warden of the north." Tommen dipped, signed, dipped, signed. "This grants Sir Rolf Spicer title to the castle Castamere and raises him to the rank of lord." Tommen scrawled his name. "I should have gone to Sir Ilion Payne," Jamie reflected. The king's justice was not a friend as Marbrand was, and might have beat him bloody, but, without a tongue, he was not like to boast of it afterward. All it would take would be one chance remark by Sir Adam in his cups, and the whole world would soon know how useless he'd become. "Lord Commander of the King's Guard." It was a cruel jape, that, though not quite so cruel as the gift his father had sent him. "This is your royal pardon for Lord Gawain Westerling, his lady wife, and his daughter Jane, welcoming them back into the king's peace. Sir Kevin said, "This is a pardon for Lord Jonas Bracken of Stonehenge. This is a pardon for Lord Vance. This for Lord Goodbrook. This for Lord Mouton of Maidenpool." Jamie pushed himself to his feet. "You seem to have these matters well in hand, Uncle. I shall leave his grace to you." "As you wish." Sir Kevin rose as well. "Jamie, you should go to your father. This breach between you is his doing. Nor will he mend it by sending me mocking gifts. Tell him that, if you can pry him away from the Tyrells long enough." His uncle looked distressed. "The gift was heartfelt. We thought it might encourage you. To grow a new hand?" Jamie turned to Tommen. Though he had Joffrey's golden curls and green eyes, the new king shared little else with his late brother. He inclined to plumpness. His face was pink and round, and he even liked to read. "He is still shy of nine, this son of mine. The boy is not the man." It would be 7 years before Tommen was ruling in his own right. Until then, the realm would remain firmly in the hands of his lord grandfather. "Sire," he asked, "do I have your leave to go?"
"As you like, Sir Uncle."
Tommen looked back to Sir Kevin.
"Can I seal them now, Great Uncle?"
Pressing his royal seal into the hot wax was his favourite part of being king, so far. Jamie strode from the council chamber. Outside the door, he found Sir Meryn Trant, standing stiff at guard in white-scale armour and snowy cloak.
"If this one should hear how feeble I am, or Kettleblack, or Blunt should hear of it..."
"Remain here until his grace is done," he said. "Then escort him back to Magor's." Trant inclined his head.
"As you say, my lord."
The outer ward was crowded and noisy that morning. Jamie made for the stables, where a large group of men were saddling their horses.
"Steelshanks," he called, "are you off then?" "As soon as milady is mounted," said Steelshanks Walton. "My lord of Bolton expects us. Here she is now."
A groom led a fine grey mare out of the stable door. On her back was mounted a skinny, hollow-eyed girl wrapped in a heavy cloak. Grey it was, like the dress beneath it, and trimmed with white satin. The clasp that pinned it to her breast was wrought in the shape of a wolf's head with slitted opal eyes. The girl's long brown hair blew wild in the wind. She had a pretty face, he thought, but her eyes were sad and weary. When she saw him, she inclined her head.
"Sir Jamie," she said in a thin, anxious voice, "you are kind to see me off."
Jamie studied her closely.
"You know me, then?"
She bit her lip.
"You may not recall, my lord, as I was littler then, but I had the honour to meet you at Winterfell when King Robert came to visit my father, Lord Eddard."
She lowered her big brown eyes and mumbled.
"I'm Arya Stark."
Jamie had never paid much attention to Arya Stark, but it seemed to him that this girl was older.
"I understand you're to be married."
"I am to wed Lord Bolton's son, Ramsay. He used to be a Snow, but his grace has made him a Bolton. They say he's very brave. I'm so happy."
"Then why do you sound so frightened?"
"I wish you joy, my lady." Jamie turned back to Steelshanks. "You have the coin you were promised?"
"Aye, and we've shared it out. You have my thanks."
The Northman grinned.
"A Lannister always pays his debts."
"Always," said Jamie, with a last glance at the girl. He wondered if there was much resemblance. Not that it mattered. The real Arya Stark was buried in some unmarked grave in Flea Bottom, in all likelihood. With her brothers dead and both parents, who would dare name this one a fraud?
"Good speed," he told Steelshanks. Nage raised his peace banner, and the Northmen formed a column as ragged as their fur cloaks and trotted out the castle gate.
The thin girl on the grey mare looked small and forlorn in their midst.
A few of the horses still shied away from the dark splotch on the hard-packed ground, where the earth had drunk the life's blood of the stable boy Gregor Clegane had killed so clumsily. The sight of it made Jamie angry all over again. He had told his king's guard to keep the crowd out of the way, but that oaf, Sir Boris, had let himself be distracted by the duel. The fool boy himself shared some of the blame, to be sure, the dead Dornishman as well, and Clegane most of all. The blow that took the boy's arm off had been mischance, but that second cut. Well, Gregor is paying for it now. Grandmaster Pycelle was tending to the man's wounds, but the howls heard ringing from the maester's chambers suggested that the healing was not going as well as it might.
The flesh mortifies, and the wounds ooze pus,
Pycelle told the council.
Even maggots will not touch such foulness. His convulsions are so violent that I have had to gag him to prevent him from biting off his tongue. I have cut away as much tissue as I dare, and treated the rot with boiling wine and bread mould to no avail. The veins in his arm are turning black. When I leeched him, all the leeches died. My lords, I must know what malignant substance Prince Oberon used on his spear. Let us detain these other Dornishmen until they are more forthcoming.
Lord Tywin had refused him.
There will be trouble enough with Sunspear over Prince Oberon's death. I do not mean to make matters worse by holding his companions captive.
Then I fear Sir Gregor may die.
Undoubtedly. I swore as much in the letter I sent to Prince Doran with his brother's body. But it must be seen to be the sword of the king's justice that slays him, not a poisoned spear. Heal him.
Grandmaster Pycelle blinked in dismay.
My lord,
heal him,
Lord Tywin said again, vexed.
You are aware that Lord Varys has sent fishermen into the waters around Dragonstone. They report that only a token force remains to defend the island. The Lycini are gone from the bay, and the great part of Lord Stannis's strength with them.
Well and good,
announced Pycelle.
Let Stannis rot in lice, I say. We are well rid of the man and his ambitions.
Did you turn into an utter fool when Tyrion shaved your beard? This is Stannis Baratheon. The man will fight to the bitter end, and then some. If he is gone, it can only mean he intends to resume the war. Most likely he will land at Storm's End and try to rouse the Storm Lords. If so, he's finished. But a bolder man might roll the dice for Dawn. If he should win Sunspear to his cause, he might prolong this war for years. So we will not offend the Martells any further, for any reason. The Dornishmen are free to go, and you will heal Sir Gregor.
And so the mountain screamed day and night. Lord Tywin Lannister could cow even the stranger, it would seem. As Jaime climbed the winding steps of the White Sword Tower, he could hear Sir Boris snoring in his cell. Sir Balon's door was shut as well. He had the king tonight, and would sleep all day. Aside from Blunt's snores, the tower was very quiet. That suited Jaime well enough.
I ought to rest myself.
Last night, after his dance with Sir Adam, he had been too sore to sleep. But when he stepped into his bedchamber, he found his sister waiting for him. She stood beside the open window, looking over the curtained walls and out to sea. The bay wind swirled around her, flattening her gown against her body in a way that quickened Jamie's pulse. It was white, that gown, like the hangings on the wall and the draperies on his bed. Swirls of tiny emeralds brightened the ends of her wide sleeves and spiraled down her bodice.
Large emeralds were set in the golden spider web that bound her golden hair. The gown was cut low to bare her shoulders and the tops of her breasts.
"She is so beautiful."
He wanted nothing more than to take her in his arms.
"Cersei," he closed the door softly, "why are you here?"
"Where else could I go?" When she turned to him, there were tears in her eyes. "Father's made it clear that I am no longer wanted on the council. Jaime, won't you talk to him?" Jaime took off his cloak and hung it from a peg on the wall.
"I talk to Lord Tywin every day."
"Must you be so stubborn? All he wants is to force me from the King's Guard and send me back to Casterly Rock." "That need not be so terrible. He is sending me back to Casterly Rock as well. He wants me far away, so he'll have a free hand with Tommen. Tommen is my son, not his."
"Tommen is the king."
"He is a boy, a frightened little boy who saw his brother murdered at his own wedding. And now they are telling him that he must marry. The girl is twice his age and twice a widow."
He eased himself into a chair, trying to ignore the ache of bruised muscles.
"The Tyrells are insisting." "I see no harm in it. Tommen's been lonely since Marcella went to Dorne. He likes having Margaery and her ladies about. Let them wed."
"He is your son.
He is my seed. He's never called me father, no more than Joffrey ever did. You warned me 1,000 times never to show any undue interest in them.
To keep them safe, you as well. How would it have looked if my brother had played the father to the king's children? Even Robert might have grown suspicious."
"Well, he's beyond suspicion now."
Robert's death still left a bitter taste in Jaime's mouth.
"It should have been me who killed him, not Cersei.
I only wished he'd died at my hands,
when I still had two of them. If I'd let kingslaying become a habit, as he'd like to say, I could have taken you for my wife for all the world to see. I'm not ashamed of loving you, only of the things I've done to hide it. That boy at Winterfell."
"Did I tell you to throw him out of the window? If you'd gone hunting as I begged you, nothing would have happened. But no, you had to have me. You could not wait until we returned to the city."
"I'd waited long enough. I hated watching Robert stumble to your bed every night, always wondering if maybe this night he'd decide to claim his rights as husband."
Jaime suddenly remembered something else that troubled him about Winterfell. "At River Run, Catelyn Stark seemed convinced I'd sent some footpad to slit her son's throat, that I'd given him a dagger."
"That," she said scornfully. "Tyrion asked me about that."
"There was a dagger. The scars on Lady Catelyn's hands were real enough. She showed them to me. Did you—"
"Oh, don't be absurd." Cersei closed the window. "Yes, I hoped the boy would die. So did you. Even Robert thought that would have been for the best. We kill our horses when they break a leg, our dogs when they go blind. But we are too weak to give the same mercy to crippled children," he told me. "He was blind himself at the time, from drink."
"Robert."
Jaime had guarded the king long enough to know that Robert Baratheon said things in his cups that he would have denied angrily the next day.
"Were you alone when Robert said this?"
"You don't think he said it to Ned Stark, I hope." "Of course we were alone, us and the children."
Cersei removed her hairnet and draped it over a bedpost, then shook out her golden curls.
"Perhaps Marcella sent this man with a dagger, do you think so?" It was meant as mockery, but she'd cut right to the heart of it, Jaime saw at once.
"Not Marcella. Joffrey."
Cersei frowned. Joffrey had no love for Robb Stark, but the younger boy was nothing to him. He was only a child himself.
"A child hungry for a pat on the head from that sot you let him believe was his father."
He had an uncomfortable thought.
"Tyrion almost died because of this bloody dagger.
If he knew the whole thing was Joffrey's work, that might be why... I don't care why, Cersei said. He can take his reasons down to hell with him. If you had seen how Joff died... He fought, Jaime, he fought for every breath. But it was as if some malign spirit had its hands about his throat. He had such terror in his eyes. When he was little, he'd run to me when he was scared or hurt, and I would protect him. But that night, there was nothing I could do. Tyrion murdered him in front of me, and there was nothing I could do. Cersei sank to her knees before her chair and took Jaime's good hand between both of hers. Joff is dead, and Marcella's in Dorne. Tommen's all I have left. You mustn't let Father take him from me, Jaime, please. Lord Tywin has not asked for my approval. I can talk to him, but he will not listen. He will, if you agree to leave the Kingsguard. I'm not leaving the Kingsguard. His sister fought back tears. Jaime, you're my shining knight. You cannot abandon me when I need you most. He's stealing my son, sending me away. And unless you stop him, Father is going to force me to wed again. Jaime should not have been surprised, but he was. The words were a blow to his gut, harder than any Sir Eddard Marbrant had dealt him. Who? Does it matter? Some lord or other? Someone Father thinks he needs? I don't care. I will not have another husband. You are the only man I want in my bed ever again. Then tell him that. She pulled her hands away. You're talking madness again. Would you have us ripped apart, as Mother did that time she caught us playing? Tommen would lose the throne, Marcella her marriage. I want to be your wife. We belong to each other. But it can never be, Jaime. We are brother and sister. The Targaryens... We are not Targaryens. Quiet, he said scornfully. So loud, you'll wake my sworn brothers. We can't have that now, can we? People might learn that you had come to see me. Jaime, she sobbed, don't you think I want it as much as you? It makes no matter who they wed me to. I want you at my side. I want you in my bed. I want you inside me. Nothing has changed between us. Let me prove it to you. She pushed up his tunic and began to fumble with the laces of his breeches. Jaime felt himself responding. No, he said, not here. They'd never done it in the White Sword Tower, much less in the Lord Commander's chambers. Cersei, this is not the place. You took me in the sept. This is no different. She drew out his cock and bent her head over it. Jaime pushed her away with a stump of his right hand. No, not here, I said. He forced himself to stand. For an instant he could see a confusion in her bright green eyes, and fear as well. Then rage replaced it. Cersei gathered herself together, got to her feet, straightened her skirts. Was it your hand they hacked off at Harrenhal, or your manhood? As she shook her head, her hair tumbled around her bare white shoulders. I was a fool to come. You lacked the courage to avenge Joffrey. Why would I think that you'd protect Tommen? Tell me, if the imp had killed all three of your children, would that have made you wroth? Tyrion is not going to harm Tommen or Marcella. I am still not certain he killed Joffrey. Her mouth twisted in anger. How can you say that? After all his threats... Threats mean nothing. He swears he did not do it. Oh, he swears. Is that it? And dwarfs don't lie. Is that what you think? Not to me. No more than you would. You great golden fool. He's lied to you 1,000 times, and so have I. She bound up her hair again and scooped up the hairnet from the bedpost where she'd hung it. Think what you will. The little monster is in a black cell, and soon Sir Ilion will have his head off. Perhaps you'd like it for a keepsake. She glanced at the pillow. He can watch over you as you sleep alone in that cold white bed until his eyes rot out, that is. You had best go, Cersei. You are making me angry. Oh, an angry cripple. How terrifying, she laughed. A pity Lord Tywin Lannister never had a son. I could have been the heir he wanted, but I lack the cock. And speaking of such, best tuck yours away, brother. It looks rather sad and small, hanging from your breeches like that. When she was gone, Jaime took her advice, fumbling one-handed at his laces. He felt a bone-deep ache in his phantom fingers. I've lost a hand, a father, a son, a sister, and a lover. And soon enough, I will lose a brother. And yet they keep telling me House Lannister won this war. Jaime donned his cloak and went downstairs, where he found Sir Boris Blunt having a cup of wine in the common room. When you've done with your drink, tell Sir Loras I'm ready to see her. Sir Boris was too much of a coward to do much more than glower. You are ready to see who? Just tell Loras. I, Sir Boris drained his cup, I, Lord Commander. He took his own good time about it, though, or else the Knight of Flowers proved hard to find. Several hours had passed by the time they arrived, the slim, handsome youth and the big, ugly maid. Jaime was seated alone in the round room, leafing idly through the white book.
"Lord Commander," Sir Loras said, "you wish to see the Maid of Tarth?"
"I did." Jaime waved them closer with his left hand. "You have talked with her, I take it?"
"As you commanded, my lord."
"And?" The lad tensed.
It may be it happened as she says, sir, that it was Stannis. I cannot be certain."
"Varys tells me that the Castellan of Storm's End perished strangely as well," said Jaime. "Sir Courtney Penrose," said Brian sadly, "a good man." "A stubborn man. One day he stood square in the way of the King of Dragonstone. The next he leapt from a tower." Jaime stood. "Sir Loras, we will talk more of this later. You may leave Brian with me." The wench looked as ugly and awkward as ever, he decided, when Tyrell left them. Someone had dressed her in woman's clothes again, but this dress fit much better than that hideous pink rag the goat had made her wear. "Blue is a good colour on you, my lady," Jaime observed. "It goes well with your eyes." "She does have astonishing eyes." Brian glanced down at herself, flustered.
"Scepter Dunnies padded out the bodice to give it that shape. She said you sent her to me."
She lingered by the door, as if she meant to flee at any second.
"You look
different," he managed a half smile. "More meat on the ribs and fewer lice in my hair, that's all. The stump's the same. Close the door and come here." She did as he bid her. "The white cloak is new, but I'm sure I'll soil it soon enough."
"That wasn't. I was about to say that it becomes you."
She came closer, hesitant.
"Jaime, did you mean what you told Sir Loras about King Renly and the shadow?"
Jaime shrugged. "I would have killed Renly myself if we'd met in battle. What do I care who cut his throat?"
"You said I had honour. I'm the bloody Kingslayer, remember? When I say you have honour, that's like a whore vouchsafing your maidenhood."
He leaned back and looked up at her. "Steelshanks is on his way back north to deliver Arya Stark to Roose Bolton."
"You gave her to him?" she cried, dismayed. "You swore an oath to Lady Catelyn."
"With a sword at my throat. But never mind. Lady Catelyn's dead. I could not give her back her daughters, even if I had them. And the girl my father sent with Steelshanks was not Arya Stark."
"Not Arya Stark? You heard me. My lord father found some skinny northern girl, more or less the same age, with more or less the same colouring. He dressed her up in white and grey, gave her a silver wolf to pin her cloak, and sent her off to wed Bolton's bastard."
He lifted his stump to point at her.
I wanted to tell you that before you went galloping off to rescue her and got yourself killed for no good purpose. You're not half bad with a sword, but you're not good enough to take on 200 men by yourself. Brian shook her head.
When Lord Bolton learns that your father paid him with false coin, oh, he knows. Lannisters lie, remember?
It makes no matter. This girl serves his purpose just as well. Who is going to say that she isn't Arya Stark? Everyone the girl was close to is dead, except for her sister, who has disappeared.
Why would you tell me all this, if it's true? You are betraying your father's secrets.
The Hand's secrets, he thought. I no longer have a father.
I pay my debts like every good little lion. I did promise Lady Stark her daughters, and one of them is still alive. My brother may know where she is, but if so, he isn't saying. Cersei is convinced that Sansa helped him murder Joffrey.
The wench's mouth got stubborn.
I will not believe that gentle girl a poisoner. Lady Catelyn said she had a loving heart. It was your brother. There was a trial, Solaris said.
Two trials, actually. Words and swords both failed him. A bloody mess. Did you watch from your window?
My cell faces a sea. I heard the shouting, though.
Prince Oberon of Dorne is dead. Sir Gregor Clegane lies dying, and Tyrion stands condemned before the eyes of gods and men. They're keeping him in a black cell till they kill him. Brienne looked at him.
You do not believe he did it?
Jaime gave her a hard smile.
See, wench, we know each other too well.
Tyrion's wanted to be me since he took his first step, but he'd never follow me in kingslaying. Sansa Stark killed Joffrey. My brother's kept silent to protect her. He gets these fits of gallantry from time to time. The last one cost him a nose. This time it will mean his head.
No, Brian said. It was not my lady's daughter. It could not have been her.
There's the stubborn, stupid wench that I remember. She reddened.
My name is
Brian of Tarth, Jaime sighed.
I have a gift for you.
He reached down under the Lord Commander's chair and brought it out, wrapped in folds of crimson velvet. Brian approached as if the bundle was like to bite her, reached out a huge freckled hand, and flipped back a fold of cloth. Rubies glimmered in the light. She picked the treasure up gingerly, curled her fingers around the leather grip, and slowly slid the sword free of its scabbard. Blood and black the ripples shone. A finger of reflected light ran red along the edge.
Is this Valyrian steel? I've never seen such colours.
Nor I. There was a time that I would have given my right hand to wield a sword like that. Now it appears I have. So the blade is wasted on me. Take it. Before she could think to refuse, he went on, A sword so fine must bear a name. It would please me if you would call this one Oathkeeper. One more thing. The blade comes with a price. Her face darkened.
I told you I will never serve
such foul creatures as us. Yes, I recall. Hear me out, Brienne. Both of us swore oaths concerning Sansa Stark. Cersei means to see that the girl is found and killed wherever she has gone to ground. Brienne's homely face twisted in fury.
If you believe that I would harm my lady's daughter for a sword, you...
Just listen, he snapped, angered by her assumption. I want you to find Sansa first and get her somewhere safe. How else are the two of us going to make good our stupid vows to your precious dead Lady Catelyn? The wench blinked. I know what you thought. Suddenly Jaime was sick of the sight of her.
She bleats like a bloody sheep.
"'When Ned Stark died, his great sword was given to the king's justice,' he told her. "'But my father felt that such a